So this concludes the second aspect of our conference, and we will now move on to the third session dealing with hardware and software security. And I'm going to ask to Benoît Poulot Préjesus to come up. Benoît began his career with Chorus Systems, a real-time operating system developer, then joined Bertin IT to work on OS virtualization and evaluation.
Good afternoon. It's almost 5 o'clock, so it's time. I'm Benoît Poulot-Cajazous. I'm going to talk about what we've been doing with Zen to make it secure, trustworthy.
Voilà. Donc, au programme de, des hostilités, je vais vous parler un petit peu de ce que Bertin a été fait. Ensuite, on va avoir une présentation courte sur Xen. Je vais aborder uniquement les notions qui sont nécessaires pour comprendre ce dont on parlera par la suite. Et ensuite, on étudiera les améliorations qu'on a apportées dans, dans Xen. Donc, il y en a à trois niveaux, dans Xen Store, dans Argo, et un module mémoire de sécurisation mémoire qu'on appelle le NSM. Voilà. Donc, je fais partie d'un groupe de... petit groupe de cybersécurité à l'intérieur de Bertin IT. Bertin IT est une vieille start-up française qui fait également partie du groupe CNIM, qui est un groupe, un instrumentier français de taille intermédiaire, spécialisé dans la gestion de l'énergie. Donc, nous avons commencé à travailler sur des systèmes utilisant la virtualisation de type Xen depuis 15 ans, dans le cadre d'un projet qu'on a mené avec la DGA et avec l'ANSSI, qui s'appelle Synapse, dont vous avez peut-être entendu parler. Et depuis, on utilise Xen dans les systèmes qu'on produit. Donc, il y a deux photos de ces systèmes. On a un système Crossing, qui est une passerelle d'interconnexion entre deux réseaux de niveaux différents. Une passerelle d'échange de fichiers. Ça, c'est notre produit. Le projet, c'est un projet qu'on mène avec DGAMI, qui est le projet CHESS, qui est la création ou la définition d'un hyperviseur sécurisé pour les systèmes embarqués. Voilà, donc ces deux systèmes, ce sont deux systèmes qui utilisent intensément Xen. Donc on avait intérêt à faire en sorte que ces systèmes soient le plus sûrs possible. Donc là, 5 petits slides sur Xen. C'est une conférence sur la virtualisation, on a très peu parlé de Xen. Donc Xen est toujours vivant. C'est un hyperviseur open source qui a été publié pour la première fois en 2003, qui tourne dans des serveurs, qui tourne sur des configurations embarquées et qui est en train d'essayer de faire une percée dans le monde de l'automobile. On en a déjà parlé dans les conférences précédentes. En tant qu'hyperviseur, c'est un système qui permet de faire tourner des machines virtuelles ou domaines. J'emploierai les deux termes de manière symétrique. Parmi ces machines virtuelles, il y a une machine virtuelle qui a plus d'importance que les autres, c'est le DOM 0. Le DOM 0 est un domaine privilégié qui a pour responsabilité, typiquement, de construire les autres machines virtuelles, d'héberger les systèmes qui permettent à Xen de fonctionner, tels que la Xen Store, dont je reparlerai plein de fois, et de piloter les périphériques. Quand on parle de DOM 0, on parle souvent de désagrégation du DOM 0. La désagrégation du DOM 0, c'est prendre tout ce qu'il y a dans le DOM 0 et le mettre ailleurs pour diminuer la taille du DOM 0. Pour augmenter la sécurité des systèmes. Donc, les exemples qu'on a, c'est... Il y a différentes initiatives qui vont tendre à converger pour avoir un système ayant des DOM 0 les plus petits possibles. Donc, on a sur ARM des configurations sans DOM 0. On a également la possibilité d'avoir la Xen Store dans une VM. Et on a dans Xen la possibilité d'avoir des pilotes de périphériques dans des VM. Donc ces trois directions sont pour l'instant en train de converger pour avoir des systèmes qui ont des DOM 0 les plus petits possibles. Si on compare à ça à la situation avec AVM, on est beaucoup plus petit. Les autres VM s'appellent des DOMU. Voilà. Alors, on va regarder les mécanismes de base, il y en a trois. Et ensuite, il y a les mécanismes qui sont plus évolués, qui sont basés sur ces mécanismes de base. Le premier mécanisme de base, c'est celui qui structure les échanges de mémoire entre les différentes VM. Dans Xen, quand deux VM communiquent, elles vont le faire toujours, entre guillemets toujours, par création de zones de mémoire partagée. Une zone de mémoire partagée entre deux VM va être créée lorsqu'une VM mappera des pages d'une autre VM, mais cette dernière aura au préalable autorisé la première VM à la mapper ses pages. Donc ce mécanisme de grand TBO permet à une VM de dire « Voilà une liste de pages, j'autorise les autres VM à mapper ces pages. » En dehors de ce mécanisme, il n'y a pas d'échange de pages.
DOM 0 uses pages for domains that haven't been used before. As I said, the communications between VMs are used by shared memories. The following mechanism allows a VM to tell another VM that the shared memory is being used if things have changed, quite simply. The third mechanism is XSM, which is a mechanism which is comparable to what LSM does with Silly Linux on Linux. So it's a mechanism which and allows us to duplicate what VM can do in terms with interaction with other VMs. VIN security module is just one module. So this is a mechanism which is a nice one. It's a low level. It's difficult to use. It's easy to make bugs, difficult to detect them. Above that, there are two mechanisms of a higher level that we'll talk about later, which are ZenStore and Argo. ZenStore is a mechanism for a shared database between different VMs, so it's allowed them to interact, and this becomes seen as a shared file system. This is destined for information exchanges, for configuration. For example, in the Xen store, the VMs can exchange information on the tables they want to share or the channel number they want to use. The second interesting mechanism is Argo. Argo is a communication mechanism between VMs, which is meant to be reliable, one-directional, one-way, security-oriented and rapid. This arrived in Xen at the beginning of the year, and we're going to talk about it more because we use it a lot. It doesn't use the big tables. The last point that's interesting with Xen, I don't know whether we'll use this later. In Xen, we have the possibility of splitting the drivers into two parts, one front end, and the other one, a back end. So the front end is for the clients using other VMs. This mechanism allows us to have, very simply, small VMs managing the peripherals and the drivers, which is of great value. All of this is based on event channels. So here you have a diagram that shows everything that we've been talking about. At the bottom, we have XSMs. There are three VMs that give access to peripherals. There's the Xen store. We have the event channels. The XSM, there are two front and back end couples to access a disk system. And there are the big tables in the VMs, which is interesting. So in the work that I'm going to talk about you now, we gave ourselves a number of security objects. The first one is not to make any alterations to the VM that would break the system. So this is a good security objective shared by the entire open source community. And then we had another goal, which is more difficult to have accepted, which is that if anything is compromised, this mustn't be communicated. The open source community is not yet ready for this kind of thing. The third goal is to ensure that the memory isolation between the different VMs is of good quality. If it's broken, if there's a failure, the system security is compromised. So these three goals, we've tried to achieve them with the hypothesis that Domzio and Zenstor are trustworthy and all the other VMs can be hostile. And this is what we did. Just to remind you that the Zenstor is a database that resembles a system that enables VMs to post information so that other VMs can use it. The problem is that the permissions are set by the owner, which enables the VM to create a public share zone where secrets can be placed. So that we have a trivial example of this, where there was the first VM, VM3 created a forum where secrets were recovered by another VM quite trivially. So we want to communicate the direction of communication, and that didn't work. So our solution is very simple, which consists in saying that the Zenstor was used to exchange information on configuration for VMs that needed to communicate with one another. And so we use the Zenstor to lead the VM nodes, only used by a VM that's authorized to communicate with the first one. So with this, we interrogate an SSM site to see whether the authorization has been given or not. Argo now. In our system, we have a certain number of VMs that communicate, and we need to have one-way communication that is fast, reliable, and secure. And to do this, in the Zen systems, usually we have a virtual Ethernet or using LiftChan to separate them from invisible things. But this uses pages that are mapped in the VM, and which allows them to communicate. And there's no way of correcting that problem. It comes from the architecture of the system. And so the solution of communication between VMs meant that we had the surprise of discovering with Argo at the beginning of the year. This was created in 2012 for a Citrix Zen client and used in production systems. There was no shared memory between the sender and the receiver. And so we saw that Zen had this module which appeared to be interesting, and it corresponded maybe to what we wanted. After analyzing the code, we saw that the code was well written, well documented, and modular. And so it couldn't be used to break the system. And so we realized that there were hidden channels, covert channels, and so we're now correcting them. So on this slide, there were the four calls for Argo. The first three help us to register, deregister commissions, which means that there's a high VM that can cheat by registering or deregistering channels, and so it can pass on the information to lower level VMs. And so we decided that this was not a good API. We got rid of it, and we've done all the initialization statistically. And the third API is one that enables a domain to obtain information from all the channels in the machine. And so we can have covert channels, downward channels, and so we got rid of them too. And the third one allows data to be transmitted. And we like to get rid of code, to get rid of security problems, but we need to maintain the functionality. And the problem with this API is that it sends back a failure when the receiver is full. It can say that it's the receiver can say it's full in several ways. The first way is by cheating, by pretending to forget data. And so we corrected this problem by stopping the domain to from forgetting data. And the second problem is that a domain can be full because it doesn't treat the data fast enough. And so the solution to this problem is to transform this call so that it always gives a value. So this was difficult to do, which means that the call made can take time. And so it takes time for the receiver to be unblocked. And this meant that there was a covert channel, storage channel, temporarily. And this needs to be solved. And so this is a classic problem. It's a problem we have when we have communications that are fast and reliable and one way. If the receiver doesn't go as fast as the sender, you need to have buffers, or you're going to lose data, but we don't want to lose data, or you need to speed up the receiver, or you need to slow down the sender. If the action from the receiver enables it to be detected by the receiver when there's a slowdown, that means there's a covert channel and there's no solution. So what we did was, there's a stage missing on this slide. Our approach was to, first of all, evaluate the bandwidth of this timing covert channel and then make sure that this bandwidth calculated in a speculative way and didn't exceed a previous defined value. I'm not going to tell you how to specify this. That will be for another presentation. The receiver controls when the buffer is full. And so we can suppose that VM is sending information, sending data. The receiver avoids receiving it. And that means that the channel is full. And the second VM, by opening or closing the channel, gives the data to the first one. Everything that we have now, the only thing we need to know, I'm sorry that the slide will, something that would take hours to explain. The problem is to evaluate the bandwidth of a channel and make sure that we're below that level. So what we need to realize is that the bandwidth on the channel depends on the precision of the timer. If you have a timer that has infinite precision, we'll have an infinite number of digits, which enables us to have an infinite size of bandwidth in the covert channel. We need that to be low. So the first thing to do is that we reduce the precision of the increments between the dates to make sure the channel sends a message to say that it's full. Then it will be filled, and that's where the signal is passed down. So we see the significant number of bits and its intervals, and then the intervals, there are fewer intervals, there's no longer an infinite number of them. There's an infinite number of them, it's a quantification of times. They're considered to be discrete symbols which have a probability that can be evaluated. And Shannon's theory says that there's a formula for knowing the bandwidth of a channel. For those people who haven't done this kind of calculation for a long time, we can take an example, which is to consider a channel where there are octets that are random. And so there's a probability of 1 over 256. And when you calculate the log, then it's slower down. When you add that up, there's a value of H. And the value for this channel is 8. So it's 8 bits per symbol, and it works. So this quantity of information, this entropy, corresponds to flow in bits per symbol, and this symbol has an output over time that has been made discrete. And so it's possible to convert this bandwidth into bandwidth of bit per second. And then Bob's your uncle. And so when the channel changes its state, we can speculate on the value of H. If it's below the value that we've set, we can allow that, block it or unblock it. Or otherwise, we wait for time to go by, for the H value to go down to change the status of the channel, the downward channel. The paper has more details on this. I don't have enough time really to explain all of that in detail. The third improvement is an improvement, security improvement on all the Zen configurations that we use with a dual transformation. So this is a mechanism known as a SLAT, second level address translation. And this is available on Intel, on recent papers on processors. It's called EPT, stage one PDUs, or P2M. P2M, like physical to machine, for physical to machine. And so this second level address translation is handled by each VM. And the SLAT is managed by the hypervisor. And the virtual machines are unaware of this. And to make it possible to have devices, the peripheral devices needed to be submitted to this second level address translation so that the addresses sent by the peripheral devices are compatible. And in Zen, when a peripheral device and a VM use the same P2M tree, it's the same thing, so they're synchronized. And so what we wanted to show was that these trees are correctly managed, and they are trustworthy. So what we did was say this is a difficult problem. We want to use the formal methods, as we're not more specialists in hypervisors than anything else. We wanted the result of the work should be code that works with Zen. And so the problem with using these four methods, it can break the code. And so we would be obliged to modify the proofs using Zen. We also wanted it to be possible for people to modify their code and make their contribution. So what we did this using Framasi. Framasi is a framework for modular analysis of C code. It's developed by the CA list. Well, I expected this to be mentioned earlier on. It's available with LGPR, and using GML, we can use different programs. There's a language known as ACSL, which enables us to annote C and C++ programs specifying the behavior that is expected of them. The plugins enable us to prove that the specifications correspond to the code. So we created a module called MSM, a memory security module, which is invoked each time Zen modifies the tables. And the MSM module maintains a vision or a model of the P2M trees used in the system, and this module expresses security properties that are being enforced. For example, what can be expressed is that a domain and its devices use the same P2M tree. We can also express the property that a page table used by the P2M trees are not mapped by them. Otherwise, the system could be broken. Another thing that's interesting is to make sure that a domain can't map a page that doesn't belong to it, unless this page has been authorized by the mechanism. And to add, I could add to that that if the communication flow hasn't been previously defined, as I said, I don't trust XSM. ACSL enables us to express these codes and that these properties are enforced, and famously proves that the MSM code and its annotations match. And so we consider that we have a module that is trustworthy with Zen behaviors. So now some feedback from our experience. We defined this MSM module. It's 900 lines of code. Half of them are used for ACSL annotations. When we launch this, there are 777 properties that are generated, and it takes about 1 minute of CPU time to prove this. The problem that order frame I see, the first one is modularity. A problem with modularity when there's a function used in a module. A function that is part of a module, its specification will want to define a behavior in a more precise way than its interface. We tried to express this in FrameRC, but we didn't manage to do that. We've got something that works, but we're not really happy with the results. The second problem, and this is the major problem in my opinion, is that FrameRC almost never says your code is wrong because it doesn't give an explanation. We don't know whether you need to give more time to FrameRC to work it out, or whether the proof that we're trying to show is wrong. FrameRC only proves what is already proven. And some of the profits, something's going to be proved by certain provers. And so when we have a profit that hasn't been proven by FrameRC, we don't know whether it's false, whether it needs more time, or whether we need another prover, or whether we need to tweak the code to make it work. So we've spent a lot of time working on this. But that being said, the use of FrameRC is really quite easy. It's easy to install. We've managed to do this quite quickly. And I find that it takes a long time. And there's a lot of documentation, a lot of examples of what works well. There's a community, a friendly community. And so what I would encourage you to do, if you're not already doing so, is to use FrameRC for your secure code. So to conclude now, secure hybrid allows us to build secure systems from less secure components. The security of open source hypervisors and open source software needs to be verified and improved. And FrameRC allows us to do this in a more usable way for hypervisors. So there's a possible meeting point between the different communities. And I believe that Zen can fulfill this role with a little help. Thank you for your attention. Thank you, Benoit. Any questions from the floor? Hello, Benoit. In the modifications, are there any things that have been given back to the open source community? This is an issue that we're thinking about now. So the idea, of course, was to let the community benefit from what we've been doing, but maybe we need to perfect that before we hand it back. So yes, the answer is yes, but not straight away. I can't see any hands being raised. Thank you, Benoit. And so now